All right, I think we're back. We are
Yeah,
back.
This is up. Okay. All right. Well,
across
hey.
all the streaming platforms.
Yeah, okay. Finally. Hey, welcome back, Gregory and Paul Show. I'm Gregory.
And I'm Paul.
And Paul's on challenged bandwidth from his hotel in San Francisco,
That's
but that's
right.
okay.
That's
On
right.
this show, we break down the latest in SaaS startups, AI. Maybe cover some memes. We're both here in San Francisco this week. I had my startup pitch competition, sold out show, five amazing startups pitched. One
Oh, so fun.
incredible startup won the coveted Nano Pac-Man. It was fantastic. Paul, did you have a good time?
Yeah, it was awesome. Amazing speakers. We had a couple of VCs speak at the event. Amazing people attended. Crazy founders made their pitch. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, we got
And
the drone racing lean guys. There's the drone stuff. That was cool.
yeah,
The healthcare
cybersecurity
company was very
AI.
interesting. Yeah, dude. Cyber. Yeah. If I knew enough, if I was smart enough, I'd start a cybersecurity company. I'm just not smart enough. I think that's the holy
100%.
grail.
100%. Hottest position in Silicon Valley is the CISO right now, Chief
Think
Information
so.
Security Officer. That's
All right, let me.
going to be the top position.
Let me run down. I'm gonna run down the topics for today's show. So we're gonna kick it off with this very interesting interview that the CEO of Condé Nast did on TBNP, saying brands are back, search is dead. I know we both have
Search
a
is
lot of
dead
opinions on that one. A lot of
from
opinions.
arguably the biggest publisher on the planet or on the internet, Condé Nast.
Yeah, I guess it
Wow.
depends how you define publisher. Okay. We have some interesting Twitter drama around no one drinking anymore. Is this bad? We'll discuss. Paul wants to make an official royal proclamation regarding Anthropic's CFO in a recent interview. I really don't have any idea what this is about, but Paul, I'm sure
It's
he's got
okay.
something exciting. Okay.
Yeah,
I
for
want to
sure.
touch
For
on
sure.
Mr. Spencer Pratt, who I'm going to crown as LA's new meme lord. Those memes have been
Spencer Pratt.
fantastic. Yeah, I don't know if he'll be mayor, but he'll definitely be meme lord of LA. Like for sure. Like the king of memes. Oh, I want to do cranky old man, Federal Reserve Bank, conspiracy theory corner, my favorite, least popular segment on the show, because we do have a new Federal Reserve chair who's been confirmed by the Senate, and I have an
You'll have to
incredibly
explain to
boring
us why that's even relevant.
what that even means, right?
Yeah, what
And then,
is
of course, we will follow that up with a lighthearted take on Martha Stewart's new AI story. I think that's a perfect topic to follow up the Federal Reserve Bank on. And then you've got some tech
confused.
bro advice. Tech bro advice on how this guy closed $70 million in ARR, so he says. And then we'll end with, if we have time, OpenAI launching a deployment
Point.
company. Kick us off with Condé Nast and the CEO and what he had to say about search.
Yeah. So I, this guy's obviously knows a lot about publishing, search, and basically the core thing that the CEO of Condé Nast
Wait, hold
has
on.
came
Yeah,
out.
wait, we got to define just quickly what Condé Nast is.
How about you do that? I think
Okay.
you're
Actually, I
probably
have a
one
good
of
story
the,
about Kanye. Yes,
yeah.
I'm very qualified because all my friends, when I moved to San Francisco in 2004, who thought I was foolish because there was nothing happening on the internet on the West Coast at the time, all went to work for Condé Nast, who, believe it or not, were like Google. They are, for people that don't know, a magazine publisher. They
Right.
own like Vogue and
Vogue,
Teen Vogue and all these other
GQ.
magazines you've heard of, tons of magazines that, like, in my opinion, are pretty irrelevant. They have some traction online. They probably own some other properties. Are they a shareholder in Reddit?
They owned Reddit.
Right?
They like wholly owned Reddit for a brief period of time, spun that out into a public company, and they're still the parent company, Advanced Publications, still own majority share, about 30% of Reddit.
So they're a major, they remain a major and influential publishing conglomerate even in the age of the internet.
Totally.
All right.
A mixed media. Okay, so the CEO essentially came out full force saying every department has now have to treat as if search is completely gone. Like search is not going to drive us any traffic. Google is not sending us any kind of traffic. you basically have to like run all of your numbers expecting search to be completely zero. That is a massive departure, right? Like imagine these publications online, they get millions of clicks before from Google. And now they have to essentially say, we have to find these traffic from elsewhere. That's going to be massive in terms of their revenue strategies. I personally think Reddit is going to be a massive platform for them to take advantage of. What are your thoughts around what he
said? Dude, I have so many thoughts on this. Think his point about that brands is back. I mean, so like if there's no more search traffic, how do you get traffic to your property? Right? You could only do it through having a really strong brand. So that was my like kind of takeaway
from all
traffic, of that.
So like direct traffic, people knowing about your brand visiting your website.
Yeah, I mean there's obviously mechanics to it as well. Like mechanics meaning subscriptions, like it changes some of the nature of business models, right? And partnerships. There's a whole bunch of other things you need to do. But I think all of those mean building a strong brand. Where I think before the emphasis was on clickbait. Like if all of your traffic is coming from Google, you need to like figure out a way to rank in Google and need to write a lot of clickbait that people want to click on. So if that's no longer the case, I think it leads to a very different approach. Some of it, which I think is great, I think like refocusing on the core brand, like what it means and building something that people like think about and want to go to is really smart. I think that that's ultimately what marketing should be about. And I think it's
I think that's like super important. And a lot of the brand is going to have to defend itself versus other brands. So places where people can essentially argue with each other, my brand is better than yours, is going to be the most important platform. And very few places on the internet lets you do that.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I always thought that like digital marketing, in a lot of ways, we had like a 10 or 15 year run with like this extreme focus on digital acquisition type of strategies. And I think a lot of that came at the detriment and perhaps through sacrificing brand. I would even say something like we spent 80 years building these brands, the Marlboro Man and like the Kool-Aid Man and Ronald McDonald, and like a lot of investment went into building these things. And then we spent 15 years milking that. Like we didn't reinvest in the brand piece. And I think that has a big impact on why the performance declined over time. And I think that like it's great that people are getting back to building brands, I think, because I think that that's really what's valuable.
Do you think like people forgot how to build brands? Remember Jaguar tried to rebrand?
Who did? Jaguar? Paul.
Remember the rebrand?
Yeah. Unfortunately, yes.
Are we going to see a lot more of that before people figure out how branding works?
It's complicated. It's
like,
what does that?
I know it is a loaded question. So how do you even start to think about refreshing a brand? What does that even mean? What's the first step?
Great question. Look, okay, we'll use the Jaguar example. And despite the fact that like maybe it doesn't align with certain people's views, I think that's irrelevant. Like if I was to just look at this in the analytical and neutral way as someone who's a business person, I would say like the mistake they made was like if they weren't clear on, or they picked a target audience that doesn't look like it's a good idea based on the demographics of who they're trying to chase. So at the highest level, I think you need to decide who is your customer, and it has to align with the product, the price point, a few like pretty straightforward things, right? If your product is really expensive, you've only got a certain number of choices when it comes to who you can market to. And like, you typically want to chase a big market, right? That's a venture requirement for venture capital, is like, you've got to like map this out and figure out, are you chasing a big enough market? Like they usually require $1 billion, right? So if you want to chase $1 billion market, like there's not that many of them. So if you're like rebranding and focusing on a tiny little market, like it might make sense for certain products, but it doesn't make sense for a product. And I don't think it made sense for Jaguar. And I think the results are in that that was a big mistake to like refocus on a really like, how about this? I'll say this. I would say focused on like millennials as like at the highest level. I think that was the TAM. That was a total market. And they don't have money to buy a luxury electric vehicle. Like it's everybody right now who is talking about branding and about consumer products and marketing, recognizes that demographically, people that are like Gen Z and younger millennials, they have enormous amounts of student loan debt that they have to pay off. They're struggling with inflation, right? They don't have a lot of disposable income. So the idea that they're going to go and buy $150,000 or whatever that car costs, it just, it's not smart.
It's an EV car.
It's not a smart idea.
Right.
I think it's pretty basic. Regardless of what I think about how they branded and stuff, like, I just don't see that as a solid business idea.
Yeah. It's terrible, right? Like, and then, you know, reports after a month afterwards, I know we're going on tangent, but apparently their sales collapsed by 97%. However, there is, they kind of also killed the car line, the EV car line. So the report is just absolutely atrocious. All the headlines.
I'll say on this is like I think there's a lot of old brands that are struggling to be relevant today. And I think they were, sadly, because I think it's a cool brand, on the way out. I think the automotive segment is one where a lot of people have said this. If you're nerdy and read up about automotive economics or the automotive business, there's actually a large long tail of brands in there. And you have people like Tesla and all these new companies that have come out. And there's only so many cars that need to get sold. And so I think that like there's going to be a lot more of these legacy brands that don't find a way to evolve and fit in.
Nice. Shall we move on?
Yeah, I think we're good. What's next? Oh, no one drinks anymore. Okay, so I haven't drank for many years, 15 years, a long time. So this chart that got shared was a study that showed like back in 1975, 12th graders reported consuming some kind of alcohol. I guess had ever consumed alcohol. 92% of them, supposedly through the study, said that they had tried alcohol. When you get to today, you're at 47%. It's a pretty significant decline. Yeah. I guess like technically in the 70s, there wasn't even underage drinking. So that's like one thing that's influencing this chart is like it's typically not allowed for people under 21 to drink in most places in America. So that's one factor. But the other factor is like there's another the studies that people just are drinking a lot less. I had a very positive take on this. I actually think that it's good. I think it's healthy. I haven't drank in a very long time. And I just stopped because I got more excited about doing sports. And I wanted to do endurance sports. And I wanted to be competitive. And I wanted to race bicycles. And I wanted to do all this cool stuff. And I just built a social network and a group of people who wanted to do that with me. And so we did that instead of drinking. And so that's generally what I recommend. Like, get into something that doesn't require alcohol to have a social like life that's perhaps
so you doesn't. You don't agree it. That it's killing social life. Like that's the quoted tweet also says, skipping drinks with colleagues to protect your health is quietly sabotaging your career, your social circle, and your dating life.
I mean, do you agree with that? Do you think that's happening?
I would say it's... So in my 20s, I drank a lot, but it doesn't... I don't think not drinking will sabotage your career or social circle. Definitely not.
Yeah,
it's completely overstated. And also, if you depend on alcohol to advance your career, your social life, and your dating life, I think that's something fundamentally wrong with your life.
How about this, Paul? I haven't drank since I've known you, right? And I haven't drank in a long time. Do you think not consuming alcohol for me has impacted my career or my social life?
No.
Right. No. At least like there's proof. Like that's why I left it. I read this thing. I'm like, this is like laughable. Like
this is a weird take.
Yeah. I think it's like a boomer take. That's what I think. I think it's for old people or like I don't exist in this world. I don't believe this world has to exist. And so I just think it's a silly take.
I agree. Let's move on. There's nothing to discuss. I have no idea why. People think alcohol helps you.
People keep saying this, right? I think Scott Galloway said this too. That's why I'm like, look, dude, there's plenty of alternatives. Like, I'm obsessed with coffee. That's like the only vice left in my life. My wife's very clear with me too. She's like, drink coffee. She's like, stop quitting everything.
The manliest thing that you can do is be sober, be at a bar, walk up to a woman, introduce yourself, and see how it goes. Get rejected. That's literally the most manly thing you can do. And then do that 1,000 times.
Okay, now we're dating advice.
We're going to get all kinds of,
we'll get all kinds of great comments on YouTube now. Yeah, exactly.
Come at me, bro.
Two old married men giving dating advice. And look, I do think I'm qualified to give socializing advice. So I haven't drank in many years. I go to bars all the time. I hang out. I have a good time. I drink soda. I drink water. I'm very comfortable, like, talking to people. I never needed alcohol to do that. And I do the same thing at work. I would just go and hang out and socialize and do the things I've always done. And at work, I was always really vocal about thinking that organized fitness type of events or activities were really important. And I complained to HR one place and said, like, hey, why does everything revolve around alcohol? Can we do, like, more activities that are related to sports and health and fitness? And they gave me a budget and I became the organizer of all of the fitness activities, and they were really popular. And we did group yoga, and we had a smoothie night, and we did like this like relay run. And this even got extended into the like all staffs and conferences. Like, I would organize with different stakeholders and different offices. Like, we even had our own company Olympics, and we've had like dodgeball and soccer. So I just think like it's a lack of creativity that people have who think that alcohol is what's required.
100%. 100%.
Okay. Now we can move on.
All right, let's move on to my favorite topic of the week.
Okay, this is yours.
Uncertainty. Okay, so really, the only thing that I want to say about this is Anthropic.
Wait, I got to introduce this. Okay, this is Paul's official statement on the CFO of Anthropic's recent interview. Paul, what would you like to say regarding that interview?
Yeah, so the CFO of Anthropic, he joined the company maybe 3 years ago, saw the company go from 250 million run rate all the way to reported 30 billion run rate. So he's helped the company also raise almost $100 billion as well. So by far, he's super integrated into the company. And like, really what I want to highlight is that this is the first time that he's gone publicly onto a podcast appearance. This is all of the signs that the company is trying to go IPO. I'm very, very interested to see what the CFO has to say, any forward-looking statements. The key thing out of this podcast is that there is a concept of cone of uncertainty. What that really means is just AI progress so far, and also the outcome, has an extremely wide range of possible futures. Everything could collapse, or we'll get hypothetically AGI. It's essentially unpredictable market that almost a $1 trillion company or $1 trillion investment is hinging on. And this is coming from like the CFO of Anthropic, right? So we're still super, yeah.
So is it like a legal reason he's doing this, you think?
I think so. So like, this is like, you have to realize CFOs,
like,
are...
they've made a statement protecting the fact that like the investment in opening Anthropic is risky.
I think just the valuation of all of these AI companies has just ran away from just like the entire narrative and what's real. And the only adult in the room, the CFO, is coming out and trying to pop the bubble a little bit. That's my ultimate take. And yeah, I think he's the right person to do it before going IPO. Because like, what you don't want is you come out with the IPO and your IPO price crashes 80%. 5 months.
Yeah, later. I mean, and that's what, yeah, I mean, like, that's what we've seen, like, private markets, the valuations are pretty extreme. And I can't think of one that held up in the IPO. Is there one? They've all come down, maybe like an Uber, I guess. And that's a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So Uber has, I would say, performed relatively well, but they haven't been like a lot of growth, but they didn't just crash like Figma. Like, Figma looks like it's really tough.
Yeah, Figma looks absolutely crushed, right? So they basically do not want coming out of the gate at a $1 trillion valuation and then the stock crashes 50%. That destroys the entire system.
Yeah, so they don't want that, or he's preparing for that.
Well, the fact that even if you prepare for that, then that kind of like will prevent it from happening. Does that make sense? Like the fact that
I think it makes a lot of sense. Yes.
Right. The worst case scenario is that you don't prepare it for it and it happens. So the fact that he's preparing for it, I think it's a really smart move. It's one of the adults finally saying things that are grounded versus what his CEO has been saying publicly. about AGI, all of the crazy stuff that he says.
I think it's exciting. I got a good story when, I can't believe this is true. When Facebook went public, I was working in some co-working space. We were renting like half a space in this co-working space. And the day of the IPO, another startup in there organized a pool, and we had to pick numbers and like what number we thought the stock would settle on the end of the day of the Facebook IPO. And it was like the nerd Super Bowl. Like we had the projection on the screen, like the entire day of like what the Facebook stock price was. And I did not win.
Well, we got prediction markets now, and you could get
that was the old days.
Updates.
I don't, dude, if I get into that stuff, I don't know, I'll gamble all my money away.
We could make millions of dollars.
You could. Okay.
Or lose everything.
I like this topic. I think this is super interesting. I'd like to keep going, but like we do have to keep the show rolling. What is next on here? Okay. So I had to touch on Spencer Pratt. And so, you know, whatever side of the political spectrum you're on, I don't think there's any denying that he is the undeniable meme lord of all of LA.
Like, okay.
Incredible.
Explain, what does that mean?
Incredible. Like all of these, like, all of these memes they've been producing, or other people producing, or super PACs have been producing, or supporters have been producing, are off the charts, insane, hilarious. Like, using all of the latest AI technology. Dude, they made a May 4th, the, you know, Star Wars, May the Force Be With You, May 4th. They made a Star Wars one that had like real actors in it. And they were like, they portrayed Karen Bass as Darth Vader and Spencer Pratt. Like they cut to him inside the X-Wing and he's Luke. And there's other X-Wing fighter pilots they're talking to. And it's Adam Carolla.
Like, that's amazing.
It's like a game changer. Like I was like, you know, there are a lot of Trump memes that were out there during the election, and they were a bit brash and a bit mean, I think. Some of them were funny, but like you can't deny that the political organizers around that campaign like figured out how to like get a lot of traction with memes, right? And so we're seeing this across the spectrum now in politics. But the like Spencer Pratt combination of like having supporters in Los Angeles who are all professional filmmakers, storytellers, like has made these.
This makes sense, right? This totally makes sense.
Some of the like most clever, like some of the most incredible ones I've ever seen. They have Karen Bass as the Joker. That was driving me. I was laughing. It's been excellent. I never thought that like a reality TV star. I could almost like write the script for this, like reality TV star runs for mayor. Like it's a new reality show or something. And all of his buddies make memes. It's been fantastic.
Yeah. Do you think this will get bigger? As in like, he's running for the mayor of LA, right? Do you think we'll see something at the state level and eventually at the national level? Where
I have no idea. It's almost as exciting as the Anthropic IPO. Like, I don't know how it's going to play out. Like, there's a lot of drama in this. I think these narratives are like really compelling. That's one of the reasons that people are paying so close attention is that like, how is it going to play out? Like, is Anthropic going to maintain? Wait, I get it. Is Anthropic going to maintain their valuation when they go public? Stay tuned. Right? I mean, like, it's the same thing with LA. It's like, will Spencer Pratt be elected mayor? And will Karen Bass end up as a political has-been on the next episode of Who's Running for Mayor of LA, right? It's like, this stuff is like very exciting. And I'm like at the highest level, I'm entertained. Like it's been great on X recently to be reading all this great content. That's my take on it. I am of the approach that the most entertaining outcome is the one that.
That's most likely to happen. Like that's what Elon says.
Is that that Elon statement? The most entertaining outcome is the most likely?
Yeah. Or he's right.
Dude, this concept goes back to like all kinds of like radical 20th century French novelists and stuff who believed in this concept. There was like someone who coined the term like, what are the politics of boredom? What are the politics of boredom? And I still sometimes think really deeply about that like, yeah, people like to be entertained. And that's a big part of this. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know, but I think it's just true. Anyway, okay, Spencer Pratt. Do you have anything else you want to say on Spencer Pratt? Do you like Spencer Pratt?
Nope.
What do people in Canada think of Spencer Pratt? How about that?
We don't think about
it. Do the Canadians?
So I would like to say that we are the pioneers of meme-worthy mayors.
Okay.
via Rob Ford.
Dude, I know exactly
what
you're talking
about. He was the original crack smoking.
The mayor of Toronto.
That's right. He was the original meme lord politician.
What did he say about that? Did he didn't even deny the crack smoking, right? What did he say about it?
He said he did not know that it was crack. He may or may not have smoked crack.
Right.
He was there, unfortunately, at the wrong place at the wrong time.
He didn't know it was crack. Like, he admitted to smoking something. Oh, my God.
Rest in peace, but he was the original meme lord.
Oh, my
so
God.
We perfect.
Man, that is excellent. Canada invented the meme lord mayor.
We definitely absolutely did. Definitely.
Okay. I think that is the right way to end this segment. Okay, now I've got to go into the world's most boring, but something I'm deeply passionate about.
I don't know why
about.
This is on this show, but you feel super passionately about it. Please spend the next 5 minutes educating our viewers and myself on Mr. Walsh.
Because I know it's safe to assume that no one has any idea like what the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States even is or how it functions.
Right.
I'll start there. The current chairman is a guy named Jerome Powell. And what they do is they set interest rates. And interest rates are the key mechanism that determine the outcome of all kinds of things in the economy. They greatly influence lending, particularly for homes. So when they're low, it's easier to borrow a bunch of money and buy a bigger home. When they go up, it's more difficult. And so Jerome Powell, in my opinion, is one of the people responsible for setting rates way too low, creating this massive housing bubble that I think we're in the midst of the collapse today. And so I don't think he's been a great chairman. And a new one has been confirmed, who I think is much more aligned with my views on how the Federal Reserve Bank should operate. He doesn't believe in 0% rates. He thinks that some of the things that the Federal Reserve Bank did created a massive asset bubble over the last 15 years, which I agree with. I think that that's also responsible for this like incredible decline in value of commercial real estate. It's not just that people aren't occupying these buildings and going back to use them. It's that they were massively overvalued because rates were held for way too long. And so I'm excited about the new Federal Reserve president coming in. It's not clear exactly what he's going to do. I don't think he will lower rates. I think he'll perhaps just keep them where they are.
Okay. So no changes. Maybe the real question is, will we ever go back to the zero interest rate policy era?
That's an excellent question. I think it's a really good question because I think that with him now becoming the president, he was one of the few dissenting voices on that policy, or he's been very public about it. So I don't think it's likely that it comes back. I don't know if it could be ever, but I don't think it's like it comes back with him in charge for sure. And I think that like he will do things to kind of prevent us from going into this crazy experiment of 0% rates. I got to think the whole thing was crazy all along. I was very vocal about it. I don't think it was a good idea. I think it created all kinds of market distortions. And I think that the Federal Reserve Bank and other people in like the Treasury Department or other parts of the government that monitor and maintain our fiscal health did a lot of like wacky things to kind of cover up the fact that this wasn't a great policy. How's that?
Great. So no ZERP. We'll see.
No more ZERP. I don't think it's coming back. I don't think it's coming back. Okay. Is that plenty of Federal Reserve Bank education for the day?
I think so. Let's keep going.
Martha Stewart.
Okay. What is Martha Stewart up to?
Obviously, I put this in the doc, right? So Martha Stewart, who I love, actually. I saw her speak recently, like a year ago at a conference.
Wait, hold on. Why do you... So for people who don't know, who is she and why is she relevant to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's like kind of my generation.
I vaguely remember who she is, but I honestly
have. This is so great. This makes it even funnier. Like, who is Martha Stewart?
Who is Martha Stewart? I think,
yeah. She's like the original homemaking guru. That would be the right term. She had a magazine and it was all about like homemaking and decorating and cooking and a lot of like upper middle class women, I think, really aspired to like her aesthetic and her approach.
Okay.
And then like And then, like, so she had this kind of, like, very wholesome image where she was, like, a homemaking guru for upper middle class women who wanted to have elaborate Thanksgivings and have fantastic dinners and make their homes look amazing and stuff, which is cool. I support it. What's wrong with that, right? And so she famously was convicted on insider trading. That you probably don't remember that part.
Yeah. I vaguely remember it. She kind of went to jail.
It was
jail,
a while ago.
Arrested. Yeah.
Yeah. She was on house arrest for insider trading of all things, which kind of like changed her image in a lot of ways. Like, and because I think this is a good example of like, or a good explanation for why I admire her. So I think she had this like squeaky clean upper middle class, ladies image. And then like she got convicted of a crime, right? A federal crime. And so she had the ankle bracelet because she couldn't leave her beautiful home, I suppose. And it really kind of changed the perception people had of her, right? But I think she played it so well. Like she kind of embraced it, like went on talk shows and talked about it. And then she did this like a collaboration with Snoop Dogg, which is like hilarious. And they kind of like related on like,
I remember
criminal
that.
Activity yep. And like what it's like to be under house arrest and stuff. And there was just this funny chemistry between the two of them that like was very like interesting and fun for the American public. I think it represented like two really big parts of our country. And it was really, I think everyone, I personally like the idea that they came together and they were like relating to each other. And it looked like kind of fun.
Totally.
Like for me, that's like what America is totally about. Right.
Totally.
And so of course, like her magazine, like, and the TV show, like, it kind of faded, right, as the internet took over in terms of, like, driving the kind of cultural conversation forward. So that's why I'm excited that Martha Stewart has an AI startup.
Okay. So fast forward to today. She's now launching an AI startup. Okay. All right.
I can't believe we spent so much time on this. Okay. And then, wait. Okay. So I read this thing and I went like, okay, what kind of stupid AI startup is this? So I read it and I'm like, actually, I thought it's kind of cool. It's like a platform for you to like log into and manage your home. And I read that and I'm like, okay, mildly interesting. And then when I read like how they do it, I haven't tried it, but supposedly like you log in and you set up your account and you put in your address. And when you do that, it's able to access all of the information out there about your home. Then I read that and I'm like, that's really cool. Cause I've used some of these tools where like you give it your home address and all of these records are public, like what your lot size is, how your home is designed. Like you have to file all that stuff. I think you have to file the architectural plans with the city and stuff. So they're available for people. And so the platform takes all of that data and then sets up like a way to automate your home. And so I haven't tried it, but I imagine it lets you like log into perhaps other types of like systems you have that have internet connectivity or are able to like link to this thing, right? Like you could incorporate your heating and cooling if you have like a Nest service or something like that. Or if you got like a home alarm system, there's ways to incorporate that. Maybe you could put like different entertainment platforms in there. And, you know, like it started to sound like kind of valuable. I was like, well, I've had like a home base for all that stuff. And if you own an expensive home, it can be really beneficial in helping you like save money on energy, that kind of thing, right? Because you got all these different systems in the house that aren't all connected. So maybe it's, a first world problem, of course. But I can see like how this thing would be valuable.
Yeah, I'm a gadget nerd. I like to be internet connected on everything. I have a Nest, getting electronic doorbells with cameras. And also if flooding is a big worry for me. So if I can get this into my parents' house to help them prevent damages, could be interesting. It'd be very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So I owned a large home in California at one point. And like heating and cooling is a big deal. It's expensive. So if you have tools that can like help with that, and monitor that, like that's a big deal. And like water, so water usage in a lot of parts of the country is limited, and having technology that can help you be more efficient with that stuff, I think is so. I can see some like real benefits to it. Whether it be success, I have no idea. I don't know if it's a big market, like how much people are going to pay for this from like a startup perspective, but I think it's cool.
I like it. It stood out to you because it's Martha Stewart.
Awesome. I was excited to see what Martha was
it's up to.
To.
Nice. All right, shall we second last
This topic? Is yours. This is some this is some tech bro advice that you have for us.
Yeah,
I did read this article.
Well, go
and
from
I really
Martha Stewart to some 18-year-old at
It's perfect.
Stash
up. Perfect.
It's perfect. Perfect contrast, right? Okay, so this guy, he recently tweeted, his name is Nick Brumman, closed 70 million ARRs in 2 years at Stash App. Stash App is started out as a payments platform for sneakerheads to buy, sell, trade sneakers. They ran into a bunch of like financial problems, as in, you know, how do you send money overseas? If anyone has done e-commerce, sending money overseas is a massive problem, right? So they cornered a little bit of a market for themselves and now have been expanded into other types of payment, B2B, more B2B focused payment companies.
Wait, I didn't I don't think it was in his article. Like, I didn't understand that the unique value prop was international payment.
Cool. Yeah. So Slash App. Slash App. Now they're rebranding to business banking for internet entrepreneurs. So really, it's like digital nomad like that selling.
That is a big problem, right? I don't know if anyone's tried, but like once you move out of markets like UK, US, Canada.
Yeah.
It gets actually really difficult to manage internet payments and all of the transactions you need to do, right? Like maybe accepting a consumer transaction is still possible. Maybe there's some high fees. But when you got to like, you want to pay people out and you want to pay them in like Argentine pesos or something, like it starts to get really difficult. So that's interesting.
Absolutely.
You know, because that's a really difficult pain point. Yeah. So you're trying to sell like cool sneakers around the world. I can see why that's
absolutely
actually really valuable. Okay.
It's a cool, very permissioned system, right? Like you have to basically accept credit card. If you don't accept credit card, then your option dramatically disappears, right? You have to essentially set up a banking system. You have to set up a bank account across the world. Like they're solving, very few companies solve the problem they're solving. And they kind of started out as like a Gen Z sneaker company, a payment rail system. So by far, really cool company.
Okay.
This guy tweeted how he kind of achieved the 70 million ARR in the past couple 2 years. I thought it was a really good, well-written article, right? He basically said a bunch of things that I think a lot of first-time founders or entrepreneurs on the internet face, where he started by reselling sneakers, couldn't make more than $500 a month, but he realized that he had really fast reaction speed because he's a big gamer. Really how that played into business is you got to be quick when you're trying to sell things, right? You might not have all the information. You might not know everything, but the fact that you can think on your feet is a massive, massive value. I completely agree with that. Like on sales calls, you're literally being paid to solve problems with incomplete visibility into the product and also the pain points of the customer. So now he's kind of said things like how he pivoted into mining for gold, which is flipping sneakers, into selling pickaxes, which I also agree. A lot of the opportunities on the internet really is about identifying ways to sell pickaxes or creating platforms, right? Yeah, I thought he's really good in kind of voicing and typing out exactly ways to not dwell too much on your weaknesses. Find out what you're good at and kind of iterate on that and leverage what comes naturally to you. Check him out. I really like it. And encourage to
Nick,
see young
Nick,
kids.
Nick Brumman, right? Nick Brumman, that's his name?
Nick Brumman, head of strategy at Slash App. Yeah, check him out. Really, really encourage
I thought,
to see young kids.
He was a little bit like kind of David Goggins' advice, like just push hard and work hard and do a good job and like kind of basic stuff, which I like. I actually agree with a lot of that. Like just kind of push through. It's going to be tough sometimes. You might not get great feedback. Like just kind of accept rejection in stride. You know, I've worked with enough entrepreneurs too to know that like in the beginning, the rejection piece can be really hard for some people.
That's right. Yeah.
And you're going to get a lot of it. I mean, I joke all the time that like, you know, in the beginning with a lot of businesses, you're going to get like bad feedback. Like your product is not where you want it to be. You've got to push through, right? That's why I joke that like you need to be kind of like stupidly stubborn in order to succeed from particularly, let's call it the 0 to 1 phase. Like the feedback's bad. Your product's not great. Like you've got to kind of be like kind of stupid to like keep going until you get that breakthrough.
Exactly.
And I think that
100%. And they just have the thick skin to like get through it, right? Like, so he told a story that I think is really, really relevant, is that he goes to conferences where he says most people were in their 60s. I don't think they were in 60s.
Huh? Yeah, if we're talking about this. He said he was at a sales conference. Oh, let me break this one down. Because I'm going to be 50 this year, right? So I don't look like, I like to think I don't look like I'm 50. You can debate that in the comments.
To a 20-year-old, you might be like 60.
Maybe. Because he's like, everyone in this conference, I'm like, I don't know if they might be my age, but I don't know if they're like in their 60s.
And he maybe said that they're 60.
Dude, it was so funny. He was saying that they were talking about like sales. And they kind of laughed at his like tech bro sales approach. That was basically the gist of it. But I loved the earnestness and honesty of what he wrote about it.
Exactly. And then you're gonna see these kind of situations all the time, right? Like you're gonna walk into a room where you're gonna be the youngest, dumbest, clueless.
You forgot the most important part of that story. So he went to this conference. He's talking to all the 65-year-old retired salespeople, which I think they're probably 45 to 50. He said they made fun of him, but he like took it all in stride. He got the numbers. He called them and he said he learned a lot from them and they all were really nice to him and took him seriously. That's the actual like lesson.
Exactly.
From that.
That's how you win. That's literally how you win. So I read that part and I thought it was very well done. All right.
Dude, we've talked a lot about going. No, I want to keep going because like I think going from 0 to 1 is really hard and there's not enough thought leadership or guidance on this out there. That's what I think. That's why I like think this is an important topic. You and I have done a lot on this and I think we coach a lot of people on this and talk a lot of people about this. And it's really hard because in the beginning, like you understand that there are like significant drawbacks and you don't have everything. And so you have to have this level of confidence and find a way to navigate through it. That is hard because like the feedback sometimes is very real. Like that's why I love what that segment or that anecdote that he provided. Like he is young. Those guys do know a lot about sales. Like they did laugh at him and maybe they were right? That like maybe some of the things he was doing weren't great, but he didn't like get defensive or frustrated or discouraged. He took it all in stride and like figured out a way to get better, which is awesome. So I'll share one example. Yeah, for me, so I kicked off, rebooted everything as VibraSaaS like over a year ago. So a little bit over a year. And the newsletter I have today, like started from scratch, like, and I just started making this Beehive newsletter and like, it wasn't great. Like I knew it wasn't great. And I know what a great newsletter looks like, right? But I did my best and I knew I just needed to like kind of push through. And so in the beginning, I sent it to some people. I got like, they were actually super nice about it. Like, but I got negative feedback. They're like, look, all these articles are kind of similar and like, it's not very good. And I just looked at it and said, that's great feedback. Like, let me try to figure out ways to make this more interesting and more dynamic and explore other ideas. And that was what I did. And I can't remember, someone else said something. I can't remember the other feedback I got, which is why I put the playlist in there. So I do a fun playlist that's not business related at all because like I wanted to have interesting content that like, you know, was, I think, help people understand the brand that I was going for. And I just put the music that I like in there that I think is fun. And we always make the playlist funny and make them relate to something current.
Perfect.
But I was trying to find a way to like differentiate and do something new because of the feedback that I got. So like the feedback that I received from the early days, like it really helped shape it. And that newsletter has gone through a bunch of iterations to the version that today, like I get really positive feedback from people, but it wasn't always the case. It took a long time and a lot of effort to get there.
Yeah. Well, taking feedback, actually like negative feedback is so important. When I was 23, I did not take negative feedback. So the fact that it really took me like a decade to figure that out.
What did you do? Did you just get like defensive? Like what did
you do? Yeah, totally. Defensive. Yeah. Just defensive. I thought I knew better than everybody else. And I just, was not open to other people's opinions, especially negative ones. It took me better part of a decade to figure that out. And that's really I think about these stuff a lot about like going from 0 to 1, about like launching successful businesses, growing as like a founder. Really that I truly identify that as the only and critical, most critical piece is just how to collect information from your people that knows better than you and also your customers. That's the only way to grow.
Paul, what are you? So like I think you're exceptional at going from 0 to 1. So like, what do you think is what's your number one piece of advice for somebody who is doing that? And like, what would you tell them?
Just like, if you're going to go from zero to one, try to first pick a market that you know more than anyone else. If that's true, then you'll have a better time than everybody else. Right. So, for example, I got into Reddit, which I personally think after 16, almost 20 years on the platform, I know better than everybody. Most people, 90% of people. If you can't do that, you just have to do what this 23-year-old did. Just try to gather information from as many smart people as possible about the market that you're trying to enter, whether it's sales, product, engineering, whatever that it is. So finding mentors is super important.
I love it, dude. So the bottom line is like, just grind.
Well, it's not just grind, right? Like, so I think a lot of people, first of all, they don't seek out feedback, especially negative ones. Because why would you, right? Like, it's painful. So a lot of people spend a lot of time grinding without getting that negative feedback.
Iterating, getting feedback, making adjustments.
Yeah. Even if they iterate, they're not iterating towards the right improvement, right? They're focusing on the wrong things. So software developers do this all the time. They just like build more and more and more things without ever anyone telling them that, oh, this doesn't work. So you have to, the only way for you to do that is just getting in front of somebody, making them pay attention to you for 30 seconds or the 5 minutes, whatever they can spare, and just painfully ask them, is this worth your money? Is this worth your time?
Yeah. I believe in some way in the brute force approach, right? Like make 30 different landing pages, make 100 videos, like just try a lot of things and see what works. Like I've used this approach a lot. I also will say like, it doesn't always work. Actually, I've done things where like I created a bunch of stuff and they're all different. And like I had like too many false positives. I pursued paths that like maybe I shouldn't have in retrospect. So it's not perfect, but I do like that system in general. Like, and we talked to that guy, or maybe you didn't talk to him. I talked to him. He like made 35 landing pages with Stripe linked up, and then whichever one got the most sales is what he built. And he took the other ones and actually refunded the money. That part was really interesting.
That's really interesting.
I love that idea.
With that approach gets cheaper dramatically.
Yes.
So that is actually a insane unlock by AI. You could literally launch like 20 companies with 20 different ideas, hook it up to Stripe, and then just see which one hits. You can do that.
I think it's a really good idea. I like this because it's a real world test. Sometimes I think too much of this like talking and it's artificial and would you pay for this? And then yes, but they wouldn't really pay for it. That's my only issue with like, an artificial product validation process. And there's a lot of people in the startup world who push this stuff and say like, oh, have all these conversations and do all this research and blah, blah, blah. And like, yes, some of it matters, but I think you've got to get as close to a real world test as possible. Like my newsletter, I just started making newsletters. They looked like kind of crappy. The topics were kind of lame. And I just started shooting them out to people, like spamming people on LinkedIn with them and like got real feedback on the real newsletter, right? It wasn't like I sent them a questionnaire. I was like, would you read this newsletter about go to market called Viber SaaS? Like I just kind of like did it, right? And over time iterated, right? So in general, I like that over a more like artificial process. So I think
I see. Yeah, I think what you're trying to say, this is actually really cool. So like there's a concept of like product-led versus sales-led. I think what you said about the 20 landing pages, that's more like product-led. Right. You can spin out 20 products and just to see which one gets the most purchases, let's say. And then on the flip side, there's a sales led process where so far we can't divide ourselves into 20 different balls, I guess, and just like say 20 different things to 20 different people. There is like a divide there. Sales led process is a little bit more hands on. It's a little bit more long tail, but product led is a lot bit easier, especially with the aid of AI today. So it's just a two different mindset. Both equally important to go from zero to one. You just have to pick a lane and play to your strength, which is exactly what he said in the post as well.
Okay, so, we got one more topic.
Yeah, okay. So this last one I thought is super interesting. The headline is that OpenAI created, so They spun off a completely new company called the Deployment Company. This company already raised about $4 billion, or around $4 billion initial capital from almost 20 different investment firms, partnerships, consultancies, and system integrators. It's a spinoff from OpenAI's main company, but it's kind of like OpenAI's majority shareholder. Basically, what this company will do is they are a forward deployment arm of the Frontier Lab, which is OpenAI. So from rumors, I think the minimum contract size is like $10 million a year. So this is representing kind of what I think is the top of the range. If you're like a, you know, multinational Fortune 550 company, and you are now mandating your entire company to heavily leverage AI inside of all of your organization, you'll probably go directly to a source to buy the service, the implementation service. That, I think, is the top of the range. And now there's going to be now, I think what that means is a cap is being set. So now all of the chips and all of the subsequent service providers will now kind of setting to place. Super interesting.
You think this is going to work?
Yeah, I absolutely do think it's going to work. For sure. Because then this becomes like an engineering consultancy, right?
All right, I'll take the other side. I don't think this is going to work. That's what I think.
Okay.
I think.
Say more.
I think. Yeah. So I hear the bull case, right? Like, hey, they're going to go out there and essentially help B2B companies integrate AI into their workflows or whatever, right? And they've got like all the support and all this excitement, and they're going to like get all the forward deployed engineers out there doing cool stuff. I just feel like there are a lot of people out there who are way better at doing this, like Accenture and Deloitte and like other specialized consulting firms who have great relationships and experience with like the change management and all kinds of other stuff that this company will not be good at from the beginning, because it takes time to build those things. They might have better technology and better expertise, which isn't a given, I think. Like, just because they're spinning this off doesn't mean that they're able to like mobilize and motivate a bunch of engineers to work on client work, right? That's a really different value prop than like, hey, like when you're recruiting people and like, come here and build the future, like that's really compelling. Hey, come here and make ERP systems more efficient across Canada and the United States. Like, that's not exciting, right? So I'm skeptical that this will work. I think it's like, I like that like these companies keep doing interesting things and like pushing the envelope and innovating.
Yeah.
I just think it looks like another like half-baked initiative that they're just going to toss out there.
Yeah.
And this one, I mean, Sora, I think, was an obvious bad idea. This one, I think, is a good idea. I think it's hard. And like, they might prove me wrong. It might work. That's what's cool. I think that'd be great. But I just think like it's a challenging market.
So the one of the key things that you said about exciting missions and stuff. So I think the forward deployment engineers will be better paid than the AI researchers and engineers themselves. Because because essentially they're going to be the most critical people at these frontier labs, legitimately getting AI into hands of thousands of people at these Fortune 50 companies. They're going to be like these unique people who have the sales chops and also the engineering know-how to essentially carry the AI models forward. They're going to have really the frontier of collecting user feedback on, hey, we need this, we need that, this is not working. The only way to attract these people to these companies is just paying them a boatload of money.
All right. Well,
because
we'll
fundamentally, like you said, I think
it's possible. Like, we'll see. We'll see how, I mean,
it attracts people like me. I think if OpenAI says, hey, Paul, we'll pay me $1 million to do this for us, I would seriously consider it. I would very, very seriously consider it.
But, you can't leave us, Paul. We need you.
I could do this as a forward deployed engineer. I may have to censor myself on everything OpenAI and Anthropic, but you know.
You won't be able to give us your true opinion. Yeah, that's right. It would cramp our style. All right. That was awesome.
It's perfect.
Are we done?
We're done. Should we end it here?
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah, right. I think we're good. That was a great show. It's been great being in San Francisco. It's been great seeing you this week. Weather's been nice, right?
Weather's been awesome.
And so you can find us live 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. East Coast time. Yeah. And send us your feedback. Post rude comments on Twitter with all the other tech bros over there. And we'll see you next week.
Okay. Perfect. Bye.
All right.
We're getting so good at this.
Dude, it's getting really fun. Is this, I got that screen as a